Some of you may be wondering how I come up with my sermon topics and titles. Well, I was asked a few weeks ago to prepare a chronological list of sermon titles with descriptions for the next 2 months for the church newsletter, which is far more planning than I'm accustomed to. Well, I went to my calendar to make sure I didn't miss any significant holidays like Easter or Mother's Day. I heard of one colleague who forgot Mother's Day one Sunday, and he lived to regret that for the rest of his ministry. When I came to March 12th, I discovered it was the beginning of daylight savings time, and the little light bulb went off in my mind, and Learning to Dance with the Shadows was the title I decided to submit. Carl Jung is the inspirational source for this morning's sermon topic. Jung wrote, "One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious." Everyone possesses a shadow. When sunlight hits the body turns bright, but it throws a shadow, which is dark. The brighter side or the brighter light, the darker the shadow. Similarly, psychologically speaking, each of us has some part of our personality that is hidden from us. Parents and teachers in general urge us to develop the light side of the personality, move into well-lit subjects such as mathematics and geometry with their clarity and cleanness, and of course to become successful. But in doing so, the dark part then becomes starved. The American poet and culture critic Robert Bly offers an amplification of this dynamic. Our culture teaches us from early infancy to split and polarize dark and light. Western civilization and its cultural mythologies, going back to the ancient Greeks and beyond, associates the dark and light with the mother and father. So some people admire the right-thinking, well-lit side of the personality, and that group one can associate with the father, if one wants to. And some admire the left-thinking, poorly lit side, and that group one can associate with the mother, if one wants to, and mythologically with the great mother of ancient time. Most artists, poets, and musicians belong to the second group and love intuition, music, the feminine, owls, and the ocean, to speak metaphorically. The right-thinking group loves action, commerce, and empire. You can see how our minds often split along these lines so that our description of the world encourages this kind of polarization. There are some people who make a decision to cut themselves off from the darkness. Take, for example, our early American forebears, the Puritans. They did not distinguish darkness from Satan. They feared swarthy Indians and dark-skinned people and walked uneasily in the dark woods of Massachusetts. Their, quote, errand in the wilderness, as they called it, their mission on this dark continent, as they called it, was to subdue and conquer it, to bring to the new world the light of civilization and a redeeming, light-filled religion. For women, the Puritans advised stockings, hoods, obedience, and silence. The hatred of the Puritans for the feminine and the wilderness gave New England a fierce energy directed toward the civilizing process. But 300 years later, the same hatred drains people and leads to some sort of spiritual death. Robert Bly tells the story of the Sioux leader Little Crow, who led a rebellion in Minnesota during the Civil War, which was put down. Several years later, a white farmer shot Little Crow when he happened upon him one day picking blackberries. When he brought Little Crow's body into town, a former soldier recognized him by the skunk fur bands on his wrists. The farmers beheaded Little Crow and then skinned him, and the Minnesota Historical Society had the skin for a while in their museum. This detail is curiously like the ear cutting that went on in Vietnam and is related to the Facebook images of humiliation and abuse of Muslim prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. So a decision taken privately as part of one's inner life to fight the dark side of oneself, a fight our Protestant forebears particularly recommended, can cause the conscious and the unconscious to take up adversary positions. And the adversary positions can quickly spread to foreign policy. and influence all kinds of decision-making. But inevitably, in this adversarial engagement between consciousness and the unconscious, our darkness, be it personal or collective, overtakes us. The Vietnam War and the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy in the late 1960s was the crisis and catalyst for my generation, the baby boomers, to journey into the heart of America's darkness in search of a new wisdom. Personally, many of us encounter our shadows at midlife through a crisis, like American culture in the 60s and 70s. We too can fall apart, often due to some tragedy or loss, a divorce, a job loss, a life-threatening illness. The ground gives way beneath us, and we enter the depths against our will. And in that deep darkness, the enlightened sainted one, the royal eye we identify with and have nurtured over the years, our well-manicured ego ideal meets its own dark shadow. Robert Bly also makes some disparaging remarks about, interestingly enough, Unitarians in his little book on the human shadow. I should add, although he refers to the Unitarians, he is by implication speaking of America's educated liberal elite. Bly describes how historically the Unitarians were of the upper class in Boston, the so-called cultured people whose mindset was one in which the upper spiritual half of life and the lower sensual self half of life begin to part company. One part ascends, the other part, no longer connected to the high, sinks down into darkness. The gaps between grow wider and wider. The educated class has the pure one, their God of reason and truth. The working class people are left with nothing but the crude physical details of their lives. According to Bly, these physical details with their shadowy aspects are now in the 21st century not only unpenetrated by this kind of liberal progressive religious insight, but they somehow prove to the unconscious that religion is a nullity or meaningless because without the shadow and recognition of the unconscious, in large part, religion is made worthless. Robert Bly also associates us with the idealists who, by exclusive interest in the truth, exile the shadow or keep it exiled, preferring their perfect paradises, celebrated in their abstract churches with their easy transcendentalizing, as he describes it, all the while ignoring, in large part, the tragic. Bly quotes the Spanish poet Antonio Machado, who did his academic work in philosophy. The poem begins, "Everywhere I've gone, I've seen excursions of sadness, angry and melancholy drunkards with black shadows, and academics in offstage clothes who watch, say nothing, and think they know because they do not drink wine in the ordinary bars, evil men who walk around polluting the earth." Machado also remarked, "Mankind owns four things that are no good at sea, rudder, anchor, oars, and the fear of going down." Well, what is Robert Bly, by way of this Spanish poet, trying to tell us, perhaps, about ourselves? Drawing upon our speculations about the shadow, the idealist with whom Bly is associating Unitarians, the idealist is, quote, "a man or woman who does not want to go down. They plan to go to the grave with the shadow still repressed." The idealists are shadow haters. They all end up, as does Dr. Jekyll, with a monkey like Mr. Hyde scurrying among back buildings everywhere or elsewhere in the city. By exclusive interest in the pure truth, they exile the shadow. The idealistic insistence that there is but one truth, as in Unitarian, deeply influenced by the Judeo-Christian insistence on one God and one truth, is all that is needed to block the shadow from rising forever for a human being, he writes. With his or her frail psychic processes that are so easily altered or ground to a stop. Well, he is a little harsh, I think. But I think Bly is on to something here. The Unitarians of the 19th century and the Unitarian Universalists of the 21st century are the self-proclaimed children of the Enlightenment and are fascinated with the light, idealists in pursuit of the pure and unifying truth. We are rational in our religion, eager in our optimism, devoted to our constructive outcomes, builders of that perfect system, that one universal, all-encompassing truth that will one day make, perhaps, we hope, all people good. We are, according to Bly, the shadow haters who are committed to a well-lighted path to enlightenment. Look what we did to the notion of human sin. We threw it out, along with original sin, into the trash bin of antiquated history. But one day Bly warns us we will confront, despite all our successes and high SAT scores, the heartbreak of our failed ideals. We will inevitably face, as did Job in his encounter with that dark whirlwind, the shadows of our lives. We will then have to grow wiser or shrivel up in despair. To be an ordinary human being drinking wine in ordinary bars, full of the longings and contradictions of ordinary people, may be considered anathema to enlightened spirituality and rational religion, but it is an extraordinary blessing. To accept the shadow means accepting the paradox, the absurdity, the irony, the illogicality of life. We need to honor shadow, make it part of us, not banish it or heal it or be dominated by it. An important result of shadow work, perhaps the most important, is the growing development of compassion, the opening of one's heart, the real and actual acceptance and love of others, very unlike ourselves, specifically love for that piece of humanity's imperfection which they carry. It is in what we don't accept about ourselves and others, what we individually or collectively deny, exile, or project, wherein lies the possibility to discover our own fuller humanity. How does one begin doing their own shadow work? In small steps, or should I say small bites, one small bite of one's projected darkness at a time. When people try to establish a sense of identity, a sense of who they are, a sense of where they leave off and others begin, they do so in small steps. Identity is a decision about difference. The kind of act required to build identity is implied in the word decision. A decision means to cut away. A decision about identity is made when I cut away definitions of who I am not until I am left with a residual which suggests who I am. For example, I am not you or you or you. I am not a woman. I am not a homosexual. I am not a black man. I am not a member of the Republican Party. I am not a Muslim or a Jew, or an evangelical Christian, or a so on and on and on. The innocent exercise of building an identity can have a darker side because it also invokes labeling, classification, and stereotyping of the many selves we have discarded. The danger is that this typecasting becomes prejudice and ultimately, through this process of disassociation and splitting from all that we separate ourselves from, that we lose the ability to see or feel so much of ourselves or, by empathy, the lives of others. This is what enabled those farmers in Minnesota to cut the head off and skin the body of Little Crow, what enabled the lynching of African Americans, the cutting off of the ears of the Viet Cong, the beating and bashing of gays and lesbians, as well as their expulsion from the military through don't ask, don't tell. Stereotypes and separation of myself from others makes it easier for me to treat others as objects. And when I see the other as an object, I am more likely to use that other, dismiss that other, and exaggerate how different we are. Who have you made the object of your harshest judgments? There you will find your own projected shadow. The innocent act of building an identity which leads to the small sin of stereotyping can be kept by empathy and compassion from growing into the large evil of dehumanization. To think from the standpoint of everyone else is hard for a person with a distinct identity, because identity encourages preoccupation with our idealized self. Once a self is marked off with boundaries of what he or she is and is not, then it is more tempting to pay attention to it and to protect it, to idealize it. Self-absorption or self-righteousness means that little attention is left over to discover and correct the stereotypes attributed to other people in the interest of identity. With self-centeredness comes detachment, misperception, and narrow-minded judgment. If I have an identity, my ego ideal in which I have become absorbed, then it also becomes harder for me to admit that I am an imperfect person capable of failure. As I become more self-absorbed, I see myself as more coherent and less flawed, which means that when I do fail, I need to disown my own failure. And it is here where those different or other people, the ones I discarded when I cut away selves I was not, come in handy. I project my failures onto other people whom I have lumped together and labeled negatively and avoided. I preserve my self-image by sacrificing theirs. This sequence sets the stage for evil and sin, an enormous evil when it becomes foreign policy, especially when it goes on without awareness. Who have we, the United States, painted with our shadow brush and made our enemy? And also, who have you personally painted with your shadow brush and made your enemy? The unacknowledged shadow has the potential to become terribly destructive because it is the failings of the others, failings which I put or project there in large part, that becomes the evil I crusade against. If I crusade against the devil in others, but I put the devil there in the first place by projecting my own dark side, then the devils in them will stick around just as long as I remain blind to the devils in me. This provides an important insight into the nature of partisan politics and the gridlock in Washington, D.C. One does not compromise with the devil, be it Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And now we see why crusades, such as our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan or Vietnam, seldom make the world better. Crusades have such poor results precisely because crusaders find it harder to deal with their own dark side, but easier to deal with darkness in others. The so-called discovery of darkness in others can encourage impulsive, reckless, evil acts because he who does evil is typically convinced that evil is about to be done to himself. Donald Trump's travel ban is an expression of this psychological dynamic acted out as foreign policy, and it is a foreign policy extension of the internment camps for Japanese Americans in World War II. One must always remember the old French proverb that says that human beings tend to become that which they oppose. One must also remember Jesus' prayer, "Deliver us from evil." He did not say, "Oppose evil." He said, "Deliver us from evil." He also said to his disciples a very strange thing, "Resist ye not evil." All this has a connection with the shadow. While the shadow is not evil, it can, when we project it onto others, become the source of evil. But it can and must also be a source of enlargement and enrichment of the human personality. The human contribution to life depends not on reducing consciousness to a narrow state of reason, such as Unitarian Universalist rational religion, but rather on allowing all the naturally instinctive things that are at the disposal of the shadow, fear, anger, lust, pride, to become part of our consciousness expanded into something I prefer to call awareness. We must understand the role in which the shadow can be an instrument of evil or an instrument of wholeness. This awareness is not goodness. We do not become good or the opposite of evil. Awareness or wholeness is different. Through this vision of wholeness and seeking of wholeness, we must win out because we have what the Apostle Paul described as a love not only for ourselves and of human beings, but a love of the other, a love even of this darkness that causes the dreadful darkening of the human eye. Through the power of this great love, we enlarge our consciousness. So I say to all of you, may the love and empathy exemplified in the lives of the great shadow eaters, Jesus, Gandhi, Buddha, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, and many, many others, be our guide.